Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where professionals in the attractions business can get insight, tips, tools, and even a bit of inspiration. Your hosts are two people familiar with the twists and turns and ups and downs of this great industry. Josh Lieben is the Director of Business Development for Amusement Advantage, and Matt Heller is the founder of Performance Optimist Consulting.
Well, hey there, everybody. Thanks so much for joining the Attraction Pros Podcast. This is Matt Heller with Performance Optimist Consulting. Hope you're all having a great holiday season. Today, we've got a special rebroadcast of a three questions episode featuring JJ Lessing from the Orlando Science Center. Hope you enjoy it.
Well, hey there, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Matt Heller, founder of Performance Optimist Consulting and the author of The Myth of Employee Burnout, here with another excellent episode of Three Questions. This is where I get to ask three questions of a guest, they get to ask three questions of me, and we just see where the conversation goes. We have no idea what those questions are going to be when we start, so all of our answers are unrehearsed and unprepared. Today, it gives me great pleasure to welcome JJ Lessing to the call. JJ is the Director of Visitor Experience at the Orlando Science Center, and I am super excited to hear what her questions are going to be for me and what her answers are going to be for my questions for her. So, JJ, if you would, just say a quick hello and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Absolutely. Well, first, Matt, thank you so much for inviting me on this. It's a pleasure to be a part of it. So I'm the Director of Visitor Experience at the Orlando Science Center. And so as the Visitor Experience Department, we oversee kind of all of the front-facing guest experiences from our exhibitry to some of our specialized exhibit areas, and then all of the public programming, all of the shows and the various kind of touch points that a guest would experience throughout their day. So specifically, some of the areas that I'm responsible for, I oversee our Kids Town department, which is our new early childhood space. We just recently opened it this past October, and it was a space specifically targeted for families of children 7 years old and under. So we have some really great, very hands-on, very interactive exhibitry and experiences and programming in that space. Our NatureWorks department, which is comprised of animal care professionals who also are responsible for talking about the animals and really having great engaging experiences with our guests to help hopefully shape a little bit of what they want to do to help the environment and better understand conservation. And then our public programming department, which is all of the staff throughout the building who are responsible for some of our scheduled programming, and even just simple demo carts where it might be a little bit less formal, able to just kind of find and talk to guests that are just making their way around the building. We really just want to have a great presence and help support our mission of the Science Center, which is to inspire science learning for life. That really starts at the youngest learner all the way up to the adults and the grandparents and everybody in between.
Okay. Have you always been in the Science Center business?
Well, so I actually got my start at SeaWorld of Orlando. I was there for about 6 years in their education department, and I really loved that blend of informal science education. I went to school for biology, and so I had kind of made a shift into kind of the informal education side. And then as I was in that career, I realized that I just wanted to expand my reach into further disciplines of science. And that's where I kind of landed into the Orlando Science Center. I've seen a lot of changes and a lot of growth within this organization over the 7 years that I've been here. And so that's also been just really exciting as well.
Awesome. Awesome. And this doesn't count as one of your three questions, but apparently you're also a stormtrooper.
Yeah, so behind me, kind of right over my shoulder, it's a real stormtrooper helmet. A couple years ago, we had hosted the Star Wars exhibit. It's a traveling exhibit, and that's one of the other things that I help oversee. And as part of that, for some added content and flair, we're very fortunate in the Central Florida area. We have a really active group of 501st members. Those are people that dress up as stormtroopers and other characters from Star Wars. And at the end of that run, they had done a lot of great engagement with our guests, walking through the exhibit and walking around the building. they loved the experience, so they gave me a Stormtrooper helmet, and so for fun sometimes I'll wear it and I scare my staff and it's fun.
awesome. All right, are you ready for your first question then?
I am, I'm ready.
Perfect. All right, so you have a blog about your 30 challenges in 30 days, right? So I would love to hear about what kind of prompted you to do that, and what have been some of the more satisfying accomplishments along the way?
Wow, you did your research. I wasn't expecting that one. So that was really just a very personal challenge that I wanted to set out for myself. It started with just a few challenges of kind of self-improvement. I wanted to work on my diet and see if I could get a little bit healthier. And then I decided to see how many of these different types of challenges I could do in the course of 30, I could do with a 30-day timeline. And I liked 30 days because it seemed like enough time to really commit to something without it really taking over my life if it was ultimately a direction that just wasn't going to fit with my lifestyle. So I've done this since about October, and some of the challenges that I've tried to keep a really frugal budget. That was really challenging, but really rewarding in the end, because as I kept a really tight budget weekly, I realized that I was saving a lot of money. So that was great, because then I was able to take kind of a fun little vacation later on. I've done other things like just trying to exercise every day. So it's been nothing that's been wildly life-changing, and that was never the goal. It was really just to see what I could do to personally improve myself. Mm-hmm. And it's been neat because I've also been able to take that into other avenues of my life, even though I haven't necessarily made challenges directly related to my work style or anything like that. I've still been able to see that there have been some natural crossover into that. So it's been a lot of fun, and just something that that I like to do to challenge myself, I guess.
Well, that's cool. And when I saw that, I kind of thought about some of those crossovers too. Like, you know, if you take that 30-day timeline, which is roughly, you know, people say it's what, 21 days to change a habit. Right.
Yeah.
So if you take that time frame, you could really apply that to anything. And I really love what you said. It's not about, you know, this huge life-changing event or, you know, endeavor. You know, it's really about doing these small things. And I think, you know, anybody can take that lesson. And if you want to improve something in your life, you know, you just focus on it for a little while and make it a new habit. So I thought it was really cool. Really cool.
That's awesome. I'm glad you checked it out.
Yeah. I'll be following along to see what your new adventures will be. Awesome. So, all right, I'm ready for a question.
If you've got okay.
Me. Yeah.
So the first question I have for you, I think it's really important in leadership and also just at an individual level to practice self-reflection and try and be as self-aware as possible. What are some recommendations that you have to try and instill that in others? Maybe if they aren't as practiced in kind of the art of self-reflection, how do you maybe encourage people or provide some sort of easy starter techniques to get someone started in that?
It's a really great question, and I think I agree with you. I think it's really important. And I think for me, the way I do it is, you know, I do try to listen to what other people have to say about me and when they give me feedback, and you know, try to incorporate that and really define if that's something that I see as a need in me, or I see, you know, if they say, well, I think you should do this or do that, and I think, well, this other thing really works for me, you know, and so then there's the, you know, you take it with you know, your ultimate end goal in mind. You still have to have that sort of thought process. So you get to a point where you can kind of judge some of those things and you know, take in what's really going to help you, and then understand where the things lie that may not help you. Maybe it's things you've tried in the past, or maybe it's things that you have you've seen in others, and you know, this is not as effective as I want it to be. So that's kind of how I start the process. And then when I see other people that aren't as self-aware, that's when coaching for me really comes in, and really getting them to see, okay, so if you saw somebody else doing this, what would you think of that? So, for instance, if you and I were having a conversation and you were yelling at your team, I know you would never do that, but maybe you're scaring them with a Stormtrooper helmet. But I said, now, JJ, if you would see other people do that, how would you react to that? Would you think that's the right thing to do? And they probably say, no, probably not. All right, so let's look at where that came from. Let's look at what triggered that behavior and why it actually came out at that particular time in that particular situation. And then we start to get them to understand what the triggers were that allowed that to happen or that influenced that to happen, so that they can kind of get a hold of that and be more self-aware of the situations that they probably put themselves in that lead to maybe acting in a way that they don't think is probably the most productive. So I try to get them to put themselves in other people's shoes so they can look at themselves almost as an outsider, if that makes sense.
That's a really great tactic, and I could see that being helpful because I think it's easier to sometimes not have to diagnose yourself or not have to think about what you're doing and maybe think about it in terms of somebody else's behavior. Mm-hmm. So I love that, and I could see that being really, really successful and really helpful.
Yeah, it is. And I because I try to do that with other people, I try to do it with myself too. So if I'm watching somebody up on stage, you know, because a lot of what I do is presentation. So I say, now, if I did that, what would I, would that be something that I would want to do? Or, you know, and a lot of times, you know, it's little things that people do that are so impactful. And I can incorporate those little itty bitty things, you know, into my next presentation or my next coaching session or whatever it is. And it really has an impact. So, you know, kind of like your 30 days thing, you know, you have these little steps, little baby steps that you can take that ultimately have a big impact over the course of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned the self-reflection on presentations. That's actually something that we've just started to dabble in and started to implement. We have a theater and we do live stage shows in there. And we've started using our GoPro camera to film some of our shows. And it's something that I think is a little stressful for all of our presenters, but it's also something that's really impactful and really rewarding because you really can see what you're doing. And it's very enlightening to kind of see that in a little bit more of just an open context where there's no bias because you're actually watching it yourself.
Right, right. Yeah, you're not going through somebody else's filter. Mm-hmm. Right. Or somebody else's experience. You're seeing it for what it is. And you're hearing your voice, which is different to hear your voice recorded, you know, than
absolutely.
When you hear it in your head.
I don't think anyone likes hearing their voice recorded. I know,
right?
I don't.
Right. Yeah. So that I think is a great tactic. And I've used that as well. It was funny because there's one thing that I used to do with a good friend of mine when we did orientations back at one of the parks I used to work at. When people would come in, and this is like their first experience at work, we'd have a camera as they were coming down the walkway and they had to kind of go past us to go up a set of stairs into the orientation room. And we would just say, you know, hey, how are you? You know, are you looking forward to working here? That kind of thing. And we would just record that whole thing. And then during the program, about halfway through, we'd take a break. When we came back, that would just be on a loop as they were coming back into the room. And it was really eye-opening for them to say, that's what I look like to a guest.
Yeah.
Right?
I bet.
So, I mean, we didn't, you know, nitpick anybody. We just said, this is, you know, for awareness, this is how a guest might see you.
Very clever. Yeah.
So I've been working on ways to bring that back in someplace and haven't figured out, but I'm thinking on it. So, yeah. Yeah. Great question. Great question. Are you ready for your next one?
I am.
All right. So kind of thinking about science centers and museums and sort of the way that people, you know, absorb and dive into content and information and, like you said, informal learning. What are science centers and museums doing to stay current? And do you see more that needs to be done, or are you kind of on a good trajectory to stay current and stay relevant?
Wow, that is a great question. And I think relevancy is a huge topic when you're talking about science centers, and I think museums in general. So I'll wear the museum hat first, and briefly, because I think I can speak a little bit better on behalf of science centers. But I think museums and science centers both, you know, advocacy in general is a really important aspect of just getting the rest of the public and a larger audience to just understand the value that they bring to the community. And then on the Science Center side of things, for us, this is just an important part of our organization at large. Just the topic of STEM and STEM engagement, and then ultimately driving kids towards the interest of STEM careers. That's a huge goal for us, and that's a really important part of our mission at large. So I think that's right in the core of relevancy. That's important because we have a need for STEM careers within our country, and we need to be able to build that workforce. And that's something that we really use as a talking point.
Just real quick, I'm sorry, JJ, for anybody who might be watching who doesn't know what STEM is.
Let me define that. We say it so often that I sometimes forget to shorten that for everybody. So STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. And the way that we actually highlight that through the Science Center, it isn't just through those topics. We try and take that a little bit further, where we try to make sure that any of our STEM experiences obviously feature all of those topics, science, technology, engineering, and math, but also highlight ways to be interdisciplinary, where you're maybe taking different academic fields and blending them together, providing a real life context, and coming up with real tangible solutions to real everyday problems. And that's been something really successful. And I think that also creates a great relevancy within the community, because you're not creating an abstract topic. You're thinking about something that may be right in the core of somebody's everyday life. Hey, a bridge broke and you need to get to school. Design something that's going to be able to solve that problem for you.
Love it.
And that really, I think, helps just infuse people to think that way. Critical thinking is also, I think, an important skill, a 21st learning skill that we want to make sure we're striving for. And then the other thing I'll speak to in terms of relevancy and how we stay current on it is kind of with our animal exhibit. Obviously the topic of environment, nature, conservation, those are always changing. For one example, this is sort of local to us. You know, as a positive story, manatees recently went off of the endangered species list, and I think now they're a threatened species. Don't quote me on that. But either way, it's a really helpful success story. So the one thing with the Science Center is that topics don't always stay what they are forever. Science is a naturally evolving field, so we absolutely want to stay current with that. And part of the way that we do that isn't just by staying informed ourselves. Sometimes it's about working with partners that help inform us of some of those changes. And also just staying current within our industry and with our peers. So that's kind of an IAPA plug, which takes place here in Orlando. So we get to send a lot of our team to that. We also go to some of the other professional conferences, like the American Museum of Association of Museums, the Association of Science and Technology Centers. Those are some other ones that we try to participate in.
Okay, fantastic. And in terms of, the physical space within your building, because, exhibits can't just change out, you're changing the battery in a remote control, right? So how do you make sure that those are changing often enough and, that kind of thing to keep people's interest and keep people coming back?
Boy, that is a great question. Absolutely. And you really nailed it right on the head as far as, we can't necessarily change out the exhibits just at the whim of our guests and how often they may want them. So that's also part of where the visitor experience team, I think, really, really is at its core, has one of its strengths. And that's because it's a blend of our public programming team and our exhibit team, where we impart and empower our public programming team to really understand the exhibitry that's out on the floor and to try and find new ways to engage our guests with that. So sometimes it's something that they may bring out to highlight that exhibit in a different way, where maybe if they bring out something new to interact with it, for example, we have a magnetic wall and we use different pipes to connect it onto the wall, and they can, and our guests can create different tunnels and pathways with it. Well, sometimes we'll bring out other materials with it, and all of a sudden it kind of transforms that exhibit, and the staff member or volunteer is really part of that experience at that point. So I would say having other things and other resources beyond just the physicality of the exhibit is the way that we can kind of help keep that evergreen and also help keep it ever-changing and relevant.
Okay. Yeah, excellent. I love that term, evergreen. Keeping it,
That's neat. That's a big one for us. We have a really strong membership base, and our members return pretty regularly. So we want to make sure that the experiences that we provide are things that they want to keep coming back to and returning to. And then also the changeability aspect of it, something that we can alter or adjust in such a way, maybe without completely taking down an exhibit, but just modifying in such a way that it does feel new all of a sudden.
Right, right. Awesome. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Thank you for that perspective. Do you have another question for me?
I do.
Yes.
So the next question I have for you, I really enjoy finding new ways to provide employee recognition to our teams. And I think you kind of speak about this in your book about tailoring some of those recognition tactics to the individual. So my question for you is, how do you maybe bridge that, or what would be your recommendations to provide those personalized employee recognition experiences, but while still balancing a certain level of fairness across your team, where, you know, maybe if one person really benefits from this type of experience, but it might not feel like a one-to-one with something else that you're doing to recognize somebody else. How do you ultimately make sure that you keep a fair line across the board?
Yeah, that's a really excellent question, and one that people tend to struggle with, because you may have a rock star that just is knocking it out of the park and they deserve all this recognition, right? And then you may have this other person who's maybe struggling a little bit, and or they're the steady Eddie, right? And maybe they haven't done anything that's above and beyond. So first of all, I think the important part of recognition is that, like you said, it is individual. And if somebody's doing something that deserves recognition, I believe the most powerful type of interaction is a one-on-one thank you. Be very specific about what you saw. It doesn't necessarily have to accompany some sort of tangible or monetary reward. It can. That's nice. But I think when people hear from somebody that they respect, or a peer, or somebody that means something to them, that they've done something that has an impact on a guest or the company or that person in particular, I think that's really what recognition is all about, and really why we do it. We do it so that we can let people know that they've had a positive impact on someone. And so I think wherever they are on that level scale, if they're a rock star or if they're the steady Eddie, there's always opportunities, if you're watching, to be able to provide some sort of recognition. So if it's somebody that goes above and beyond, you can recognize them for going above and beyond, and whatever that looks like in your organization. And by the way, just a brief aside on the above and beyond, I challenge people to really think about what that is and what that looks like, because so many people talk about, well, they went above and beyond. Above and beyond what, right? So what was the standard, and then what was the specific observable behavior that they displayed that was actually above the standard, right? So
yes,
you can
absolutely
actually tell somebody, JJ, this is the standard, and you went way above, by leaps and bounds, and here's what it was specifically. So I challenge people to really look at what that is. But then you've got the steady Eddie, and you might be thinking, well, this person just comes in every day, does their job, we don't have to worry about them. That in and of itself, to me, is worthy of some sort of recognition of that, right? So you can recognize consistency. You are here every single day, and you are on time every single day. And that's probably something that they just do because that's part of their personality, and that's how they function. But knowing that somebody else noticed that, I think, is really powerful. So if you're watching, there's always something that you can provide to people in terms of recognition. Now, the other part of that is that some people require a little bit more, and some people don't require nearly as much. Like that steady Eddie may not need as much, or they may not need it in a way that other people might need it. So the steady Eddie might really get energized by, again, maybe a personal thank you, a handshake, not in front of the whole team, you know, potentially. Now, there may be some other rock star or somebody that's more outgoing, excuse me, that would like it in front of the team. And they would, you know, hey, this person got a great guest comment. You know, give him a hat, give him some balloons, and let's really sing their praises. And that made me more appropriate to them. I think when you try to do things too much across the board and you say, okay, we're going to have an employee of the month. Fantastic. Well, the reward for the employee of the month is you get a hat, you get balloons, you get cake, and everybody comes around and sings a song to you. Well, that Steady Eddie may not want that.
Sure. And
they may decrease their behavior, start coming in late, so they don't get that. You know, so it's kind of a I don't know if catch 22 is the right phrase, but you are actually not demotivating, but you're encouraging the behavior that you don't want because of the reward that you're giving to everybody, right? So I think the fairness piece, back to your question, really has to, again, come back to the individual. What's appropriate for that individual, and how will my communication with them best show that they've made a positive impact? So that was kind of a long answer, but that's kind of that's kind of my thought.
No, I think that's really, really great feedback. And I think that's something that can sometimes be really challenging, because I think all managers and leaders want to, at their core, make sure that they're not doing something that feels unbalanced to their team, because I think that definitely right. gets recognized. But still being individualized enough and personalized enough that you are creating the right kind of recognition, because absolutely, I'm one of those people that doesn't necessarily want the parade and the balloon and the song. So I definitely think that there's that balance. And you know that there's other people that want nothing more than that level of recognition. So I think it's important right. to be able to recognize and kind of know what those individuals need.
Right, right. You know, and I think part of the recognition process, again, is not only letting that individual know, but if they can spread that to other people as well. So maybe there's somebody that doesn't necessarily like the parade and the balloons and everything, but they might love their name on a plaque.
Yeah.
You know, or their picture up or something, because they can look at it, they can see it, but they don't have to have the people glaring at them. And, you know, it could almost be embarrassing for some folks, just depending on who they are. So, you know, there's all kinds of different ways to do that. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of the fact that recognition doesn't have to be expensive. You just have to care enough to do it.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And, I mean, some of the things that have been most impactful to me over the years have just been a simple and sincere thank you from somebody that, you know, noticed what I was doing. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I could talk about recognition all day. So great question. All right. So I think I have one more left for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Giddy up. All right. So this is what one of my other guests called a beach ball question. So it's not necessarily about leadership or museums or anything, but I just wanted to hear what you had to say about this. So let's say that you have a friend who owns a restaurant. And maybe okay. you do have a friend that owns a restaurant, I'm not sure. But and they want to name an item on the menu after you.
Oh, okay.
So what would that item be, and what would the name be?
Oh.
And it might just be JJ, the JJ whatever, but what would that food item be?
Wow, that's a great question. okay, hold on, let me think about this. Okay, so I think I would just make it something that I would first and foremost want to eat.
Okay.
I think that's going to be important. So I'm a steak eater, so I think I would go with a really delicious cut of steak. Let's go with the sirloin.
Okay.
And maybe like some fresh vegetables and something else really delicious. And I think I would just call it the JJ.
Okay, just keep it simple. Yeah.
And at its core, I think beyond just the fact that it's something I would want to eat, I would hope that it's kind of, you know, well put together. It tastes good, and it makes people feel good when they're eating it.
Okay, very good, very good. So the JJ steak sirloin sirloin steak. Awesome.
Yeah.
look forward at a restaurant near you.
Okay, so I have one last question for you as well.
Great.
In your full span, whether that's just not even just within your career, full spectrum of advice that you've received over your years, what would you say your best piece of advice is that you've ever received, and why would you say that has been kind of at the top of your list of best advice?
Yeah, it's a great question. Somebody asked me a similar question to that, and I may answer it differently this time. But I think for me, when I get advice to be myself, I think that's the best, because when I feel like I am the most productive, it's when I'm firing on all of my cylinders, if that makes sense. So I'm not trying to be somebody else. I'm not trying to do what other people are doing. I'm doing what my natural talents allow me to do. So I think that's probably the best piece. And, you know, my dad used to always say, you know, I don't care what you do for a career, just be the best you can be. And I mean, I think that kind of goes along with that, you know, just do whatever you want to do, but just be the best at it. And that keeps me driving forward and, you know, just, yeah. So I think that's probably, how about you? How about your best advice?
Oh, you know what? I didn't really have an answer for that. So I think, actually, the best piece of advice I probably ever received was when I was about 8 years old.
Okay.
Because when I was a kid, I was probably a lot more serious than I should have been as a child. And so someone asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I had this very smart alecky answer because I thought it was really clever. And I said, I want to be an adult. That's what I want to be when I grow up.
Okay.
And everyone used to just kind of laugh, like that was just a really funny adult joke that they thought was funny. But I remember a family friend heard me say that, and she said, you do not want to be an adult. Enjoy your youth, enjoy your childhood, because adulthood is going to come, and there's no reason to try and want to get there faster. And I think that was a great piece of advice. You know, I think it's easy for us to get caught up in and just get a little too serious and take ourselves too seriously. So that was just a really helpful reminder for me at eight to not take myself too seriously. And it's something that I try and remind myself periodically, you know, just to take a breather, have some fun, mm-hmm. and, you know, the serious stuff is going to happen regardless. So you don't have to take everything that seriously.
Right. Exactly. So has that followed you, and have you tried to kind of keep the fun going and the zaniness and kind of childhood?
I mean, I think zaniness does sort of abound, you know, from stormtrooper helmets to there's always something happening. And I think that's just the nature of the Science Center. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely think my career choice led me into something that still lets me kind of be a kid at heart. So, yeah, I think that did kind of follow me.
Fun. Awesome. That is really good advice. Yeah, don't grow up too fast.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. Fantastic. Well, I think we've come to the end. I think that's all the questions. So three questions each. So JJ, thank you so much for your time today. It was really, really fun talking to you, and I hope you enjoyed it.
I did. Thank you.
Good. So I will sign off from here and say thank you again, JJ, for your time, and we'll see y'all next time.
Thank you for joining us on the Attraction Pros Podcast. For more information on Josh Liebman, please visit AmusementAdvantage.com. For more information on Matt Heller, please visit PerformanceOptimist.com.